It's time. There's something very important about America and Americans that we should never forget. Whenever disaster strikes, wherever hardships threaten, Americans put aside any differences and go rushing to the assistance of those most in need. While terrorist mobs were torching U.S. embassies, American food flights were saving starving children. Within hours after an earthquake devastated Soviet Armenia, Red Cross relief workers braved 12-hour flights in unheated airplanes because that was the only way they could get there. Over and over again, the record shows that when natural or man-made catastrophes strike, Americans reach out to help each other all across America and around the world. And that's why the American Red Cross is there, to express in deeds the compassion that Americans instinctively feel. For more than 100 years, those left homeless and hungry by tornadoes and floods, and then forced into an uncertain freezing night, have had their faith restored by the American Red Cross. Now, the Red Cross needs an infusion of that great American spirit of caring and helping. When nature's blind fury blew apart the Southeast with Hurricane Hugo and laid waste to Northern California with one of the century's worst earthquakes, the Red Cross was there with help and comfort, thanks to the generous support of the American people. And because of you, it will be there again when the next big disaster strikes. There is not one American who, if given the chance, would not give a blanket, fill a food basket, or comfort a frightened child with a kind word and a warm smile. And even though we want to reach out, most of us simply can't abandon our own obligations to rush to those in need. But through the Red Cross, we are there, with our prayers, our thoughts, and our contributions. Come on, we did it before, and we can do it again. Decade after decade, a sometimes far too cruel world has been shown that Americans not only meet every massive challenge with their compassion, but exceed the need. To everyone who's again answering the call, this is one grateful American who says a heartfelt thanks for reaching out through the American Red Cross. Because it's time. The United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the earth. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottomland of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up, and their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. I was there. I saw it. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it is the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pumped billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. Now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, warmongering Americans. I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplanes. Come on, let's hear it. Does any other country in the world have a plane to equal the Boeing Jumbo Jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios. You talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy, and you will find men on the moon, not once, but several times, and safely home again. You talk about scandals, and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They are here on our streets, most of them, unless they are breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from Ma and Pa at home to spend here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they said, the hell with the rest of the world? Let someone else buy the foreign bonds. Let someone else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France, Germany, and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both are still broke. I can name you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone. And I'm one Canadian who's damned tired of hearing them kicked around. They will come out of this thing with their flag high. And when they do, they are entitled to thumb their nose at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these, but there are many smug, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans that it was broke. This year's disasters have taken it all. And nobody, but nobody, has helped.
Thank you.
87 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here. But it can never forget what they did here. It is for us the living rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us. That from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Thank you.
beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesties above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Oh, beautiful, for patriot dream that sees beyond the years, thine alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Thank you. In 1861, the American people elected a man to the presidency whose thoughts, words, and deeds will never be forgotten. In terms of a person, you might have voted him most unlikely to succeed. He had no formal education. He learned what he knew from reading by the light of a fireplace and just talking to people. That was his big thing, just talking to people, listening to what they had to say, judging the right from the wrong, the good from the bad, and then formulating his own personal philosophy for living, always with guidance from God. That's where he placed his complete faith. And to look at Abraham Lincoln, you wouldn't think of him as a president. Historians say he was rather ugly. He had big flappy ears, a large nose, a long face, and he was tall and rather awkward. But that's Abraham Lincoln on the outside. Inside, he was 100% a good human being, 100% a man, 100% a genius in dealing with people, and 100% a man who had foresight about America in 1974. The most significant and shocking thing Lincoln did was to declare freedom for the slaves, a move in the middle of one of the most bloody and violent wars the U.S. has ever seen on its homeland. The Union was divided. A war ensued. Brother fought brother. Families were destroyed. Land was ravaged. And through it all, Mr. Lincoln stood firm. He truly believed that all men are created equal, and no matter what the cost, it's an idea worth fighting for. Abraham Lincoln symbolized everything America stands for today. Freedom for all. Even today, that's something we're still fighting for. We're a lot closer than he was. But he started the battle, and we'll win it someday. More than that, Lincoln symbolized the feelings of all Americans. Freedom and justice. The right to work, live, and worship as we wish. They don't come without a fight, and they're worth fighting for. Abraham Lincoln made the most controversial move of his life when he issued the Emancipation Proclamation. And it wasn't easy, but nothing worthwhile is. From his diary, here's the way his thinking went September 22nd, 1862. I was determined to issue a proclamation of emancipation. I made the promise to myself and to my Maker. I am going to fulfill that promise. I am here. I must do the best I can and bear the responsibility of taking the course which I feel I ought to take. He bore that responsibility and won. And today the tremendous wisdom lives on. John Wilkes Booth pulled a gun in a Washington theater and cut short Lincoln's life, but he couldn't destroy what the man stood for. I believe if Booth knew at the time what he was destroying, the trigger would never have been pulled. Today, 1974, when you look for a better job, that's Lincoln. When you move to a nicer home because you've earned more money, that's Lincoln. When you demonstrate peacefully against a government policy because you think it's wrong, that's Lincoln. The fight for freedom is Abraham Lincoln. And today, Lincoln lives on. I wonder if you know how good you have it in America. As long as there has been a United States, Americans have not been slow to complain and find ways to do things better. That's great. It's taken America from the foothills of the Atlantic seaboard to a foothold on the moon. But I can't help but think that all those people who are crying and moaning that the American dream is dead would change their tunes in a hurry if they did what I did in 1971. You see, I went behind the Iron Curtain. I spent 12 days traveling across the Soviet Union, seeing things the way Russians themselves see them. Do you appreciate being able to go to church on Sunday wherever you choose, or of not having to go at all? In Russia, attending religious services puts your national loyalty in question. Chances are you've been able to afford that second car. In the Soviet Union, even with a pocket full of money, buying that first set of keys is almost out of the question. How about that new house of yours? You've had to save and sacrifice, but it was worth it. In Russia, you're told where to live, and often three or four families share one bathroom and kitchen. The next time you complain about how things are here at home, think about the students in Moscow who told me they would do anything just for a glance at some uncensored books. the young people in Kiev and Leningrad who begged for me to send them popular American music, the old man in Tashkent who tried to explain why he had only one choice in every election, or the mother of seven in Murmansk who was looking forward to the new five-room apartment in which her family would soon be living. But above and beyond all that, the man I'll never forget is the weather-beaten old farmer who whispered secretly that before he died, for just one day, he'd like to have known how it feels to just be an American. As I page through the history books, I can't help but admire and respect the courage of what I believe to be the strongest Americans in the history of the United States. They're not the presidents, lawmakers, investors, or businessmen. They're the Western pioneers. I can't help but think of them when I sit in my warm house eating supermarket food. The young, strong Americans who first settled what was then called the West had the toughest life I've ever dreamed of. And it's with respect that I consider their experience. Many young men with dreams grew tired of city living in the late 17 and early 1800s. And many land brochures made the West sound like a romantic place to be. So they packed up all their belongings, their family, furniture, and food, and took off in covered wagons to explore new territories. At that time, the new land was what we now call Ohio and Indiana. It's hard to picture being totally dependent upon one family and nothing else, but that's the way they were. All by themselves, they would find a piece of land they liked, clear the trees by hand, plow the fields by hand, plant the crops by hand, shoot the food for their table, make the clothes they wore. And it wasn't fun. Disease was rampant. When a mother gave birth, it was the father and the rest of the family who assisted. No sterile delivery rooms of today. There was widespread death, simply because there was no one else around to help. You couldn't just call a doctor. For those first Western Americans, the simple things in life were the most important. Reading around the fire with the family, fixing a house together, planting the crops, eating the food they harvested. And a big treat wasn't a party, it was hosting another family passing through, heading west. A prospective migrant to Illinois warned his family, "What awaits you in this region is a life full of hardships, want, and toil. By this choice, we shall close ourselves off from the rest of the world for many years." But they left anyway, searching something better. Without cars, record players, TVs, or radios, they somehow managed to find happiness. And I can't help but think there's something to be gained from looking at their experience. They were people just like you and me, but they went without everything we have, and they may have been happier. The lesson to be gained is twofold. The simple joys of living may be the best. Material possessions are not always the true test of a man. It may be in the way he lives his life, caring for his family and others. More important, the Western pioneers are an example of the spirit that lives in America today. In 1961, we turned to outer space, and John Glenn made it. Since then, we've put men on the moon. Now we're setting up a space station, and shortly we'll rendezvous with the Soviets in outer space. What a long time it's been since a family traveled west in a covered wagon. But to me, it's important that we remember how they suffered and how they lived so that we appreciate the world as it is today. The Western pioneers were truly courageous. And if they were alive today, they would have been the men in the last Skylab mission. The American flag was burned in Tehran again today. In a dozen other places, the stars and stripes were trampled underfoot. What is happening to the greatest nation on earth? Has the moral leader of the West become a weak, pitiful giant? And if it has it happened to the people of this nation? Is it true? Have Americans lost their fight? Why do we allow third-rate dictators around the globe to pick on Americans and go without punishment? And why, after Americans have stood up to support so many others in distress, does it seem that no one wants to stand up for America? The men and women who served in the wars today can't even afford to live decently in retirement. It was American Marshall Plan know-how that saved Western Europe from communist domination. It is in these countries today that American servicemen can barely make ends meet because their dollars are worth so little. America has never turned away refugees seeking freedom and security. Yet, when America looks around for help, grinning oil sheiks say only, pay more. Even the Soviet Union, boasting, we will bury you, is allowed to buy American wheat because its crops have failed. When Americans were begged over and over to save someone in some distant place from disaster, you never asked, what are their politics? How can they repay our help? Americans only wanted to know how much is needed, and can we send it faster? We see Americans pleading with Cambodians to allow us to save their own people. The Reds worry about political implications. Americans worry about dying children. The boat people, the Vietnam War orphans, Cubans fleeing Castro's dictatorship, Hungarians escaping Soviet tanks, the millions uprooted by the Holocaust. These and countless others have always found a safe haven in the U.S. of A. America has drawn its strength from the influx of new blood, but there is growing evidence that this strength is dwindling. Could your critics and enemies be taking heart from what they see here? What do petroleum potentates think when they see Americans drawing guns on each other to be first in line for gasoline? What do the Kremlin leaders think when they see American judges allowing pornographers to flourish while telling school children they can't say a silent prayer before class? What do even your friends think when they see Americans waving communist banners and donning armbands to march in the uniform of this nation's enemies? If some radicals think they can burn your flag and kill your diplomats and get away with it, maybe part of the reason is what they believe you have shown them. They are wrong. The penny anti-Hitler impersonators, the arrogant petrodollar potentates, the tyrannical ayatollahs don't believe that you can stand up, America. They don't think Americans have the fortitude to tell them, keep your lies, stop your ultimatums, and to hell with your oil. They don't believe the spoiled, luxury-loving Americans can endure the hardship they threaten. They figure America has exchanged its principles for their petroleum. They see American compassion as weakness and American restraint as fear. Are they right, or are you willing to stand up, America? Are you willing to stand up and say, we've had it with those who accept our food, our technical help, our money, and then repay kindness with insult, injury, and intimidation? Are you ready to let them know enough is enough? We are fed up? Then stand proud and say, now we are determined. Now we are united. We are Americans. Are you ready to tell the world if they aren't willing to prove they're your friend, then they'll have to accept the consequences? You've done it before, and you can do it again. It's time. It's time for Americans to stand up. Stand up for what America stands for.